back, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Good morning. Yeah, yeah. Good morning. Welcome, welcome, welcome to another episode of the What's the Temp podcast. My name is Bettina, and I am coming in hot.
I love how you do it slightly differently every time. I'm Jen, and I need to check in so I don't check out.
Today's episode is called Seasons and Changes, and this one excites me, as they all do. But Jen, let's do your temperature check. Today's temperature check is a life season check. What's your temp check today? I know.
I'm always ready with the temp check, but then I always forget you're going to put some type of twist on it. And you're going to be like, oh no, it's the spiritual or the cultural temp check. And then you throw me every time. This is what it is. Have you ever been in San Francisco? So you're in a park and you're wearing a tank top because it's a beautiful sunny day. So you're feeling free. It feels like a spring or a summer. You know how it doesn't get that hot in San Francisco, or at least when I've been there, it doesn't. So it's, you know, you're relaxing, you're feeling that sense of freedom, you're absorbing that California vibe. And then all of a sudden a breeze comes in, but breeze would be too kind of a word for it. It's like a bone chilling wind.
Mm-hmm.
And it just blows in and you realize I did not bring a sweater and now it is absolutely freezing. And the dominant feeling is it's not safe here.
Oh, yes. Yes.
That's how I feel every time I'm in San Francisco. And that is my seasonal temp check.
I get that. I get that. It also reminds me of, do you remember when the seasons were changing and when we were in middle school and high school and you didn't layer up thinking it's going to be one way all day and it changes suddenly and suddenly you're uncomfortable whether it's too hot or too cold?
Yes, that's it. Actually, that might be even more accurate. It's like a day in October where you're wearing your new flannel shirt, but then it turns out to be like 78 degrees disgustingly.
Yep.
And then you're sweating and uncomfortable.
You're stuck.
But you're wearing a long sleeve shirt underneath because you wanted to wear your fall wardrobe. It's also like that.
I get that. I get that. I resonate with that. Well, my life season check is, okay, so you know how my oven temp is like 350, right? Well, that's the whole reason we call this thing What's the Temp.
Mine's 425. Yeah.
But my temp, my life season check right now, temp check is about 300. And so I feel like I'm slowly warming up to my point. And what that means is like there's extra cleaning for me. There's packing up old clothes and or you know, seasonal clothing and taking out the stuff for the new season. And I don't know if you remember this, but for years, I did what you're doing, which is waking up early because I was doing my Matthew 6:33 lifestyle. This is when I was getting serious about my prayer time in the morning and stuff like that. So having taken the opportunity over the last couple of days to look at my life and see what's working and what's not working is waking up at any time. Just kind of being haphazard with what time I'm getting up. Even though I'm very productive, I feel that there are some things that are being eked out. So if I want to do my study for so many days, I'm not able to do it on some days, which was okay because even if I do my study every other day, I'm good, right? So I'm looking at this month and I've literally done half of what I would have done on a normal month. And so I just had to kind of look and see what's working and what's not. And what's not working is going to bed at any time and waking up at any time. But what I am going to do is I set my alarm for 5:55. So I can be up and at them by 6. So that's me. I'm in a good place. I feel like I'm warming up and I want this year to be a record-breaking year. And in order to do that, I have to take these temp checks. And so it's important. So I'm excited about that. I'm excited.
I love that for you.
Thank you.
Yeah. And then you were reverse inspiring me because I'm like, well, what should I look at from a bird's eye view. What should I clean out of my house? You know, yeah. It's cool to hear what other people are doing because it's when people actually do the spring cleaning in the spring, I always think that's amazing.
Mm-hmm. And I do it twice a year. So later. I like to wash the walls and move the washer and dryer and move the beds. What? Yes, girl, I got to get behind and move the refrigerator and the stove.
Yeah, I was just about to ask, are you one of those people that moves the refrigerator
yes,
out
ma'am,
from
twice
where
a year.
So how do you do that? Can you teach me? I've never done it.
So I make sure, because you know it gets really stained and stuff.
Oh, it's disgusting, but I've never tried to pull it out.
Yeah, so there's two ways. There's like a pulley little rope system you can get from like Home Depot or something or Lowe's. And it's simple because, you know, it has like wheels like under there. You just can't see them. So it's not.
I wouldn't know. Yeah.
I do it twice a year. So it's that time for me. So I'm breaking down.
Oh my gosh.
I'm breaking down every room. Oh my gosh. Every room. Over the next 2 weeks, every room is going to get every closet, every drawer.
That's ambitious.
Everything is going to be ridiculously cleaned up.
That'll feel great.
That's where I am. But I'm loving I'm loving the season change. So today's topic for our backstory is major transitions that we've supported each other through. And I don't know if you're looking at the time, but we're really zooming through this today. So that feels amazing. Mm-hmm. But major transitions that we've supported each other through. And I just want to start by saying, I feel like my entire life is a transition for you. I don't know how you do this in friendship with me because I am constantly pivoting and transitioning and doing all these things. And you just love and support me through it. So thank you. Thank you, friend. Thank you. But let's talk about it. Let's talk
about
it.
It's what I love about you. It's what I love about you.
Yeah, it's one of those. And I feel like I'm in a major one right now. I'm a California transplant that has moved to Indiana. I've never lived anywhere else other than California. And so being here, I love having four seasons. In California, we get one and a half, you know. Mm-hmm. So here I get the four seasons. I love the inclement weather. I love the cold weather. I love the snow. I know, because I call it a five-minute town.
Inclement weather. That's like something they say on the news.
It is. But I love it. You know, it's inclement weather for me because I don't experience it in California. You know, it rains for 5 minutes in California and the freeways stop.
California people drive me crazy.
I know.
When it would become 68 degrees and everybody would come out with their Uggs and their wool caps, I was like, you are kidding me.
No, how about though? My daughter, she said, what's the weather out there, Mom? I said, oh, it's 40. It's warm. She said, oh, my gosh, you sound so like a Midwesterner now.
Midwestern, yeah.
She said, because who says 40 is warm? You know, we are dying. And I'm like, I know, poor baby.
It can feel warm if it's a sunny day.
And for me, I didn't know that I would adjust this quickly. I had no idea.
You really adjusted.
I had no idea. So, but to me, up from 7 is 40 is, I can go outside in shorts and a t-shirt. What are you talking about?
Freedom. You know? Yep. You know why I'm really proud of you? Because the people that I met in California, every single one of them, it just seemed like they had no intention of ever leaving California. They did not have the constitution to withstand any weather that was not California-like. Some people would move up the West Coast, so maybe Portland or something like that, if they had a different ethos or wanted a different cost of living. And then there would be a person here or there who would think that they wanted to move to New York, but they would go to New York and then experience the harsh reality of that, both in terms of the demeanor of people, but also in terms of the weather. And they would head back to California. But I never got the impression that anybody had the
chutzpah.
There's this pluck. I don't know. Like, there's a bunch of words that are sort of swirling around in my head, but there's a character building that happens when you have to withstand this type of adversity temperature-wise, you know?
Yeah. But think about it.
Look what she did.
Remember the last few years of my career in dentistry? Remember I was a sales attract. I think the last 5 or 6 years, I was a traveling salesperson for dental products, and my territory was the East Coast.
I guess I did know that. I forgot about that.
Yeah, huh. So I did that for years. So remember, for every year, I had to be at the midwinter dental meeting in Chicago.
Yes, and I went to that convention every year, too. It was like February in Chicago.
Every year.
Oh, my gosh. It was so cold, Bettina. Girl. It was so cold because you add in that wind chill.
Oh, right off that lake, though. How about that? Do you remember the hotel convention center was right off the lake? So
yes, and then the tunnel, the wind tunnel that would even just happen between the buildings, it was brutal. Brutal. And I was born and raised in the winter climate, but that is a whole nother level.
So being a California girl, it happened to me the first time I went, and I took a suitcase full. And then you know how we talked about me dressing and my shoes, right? Mm-hmm. So I went California style, honey. Cute dresses, strappy sandals, because winter in California, you know?
It doesn't exist.
So I went with a suitcase full of cute, just fashionable items. And I remember
open-toed shoes, no doubt.
Yes, of course. And so the first 2 days, I never left the hotel or the convention center the first 2 days. But then the third day, my friends were like, let's go. There's this great restaurant I want to introduce you to. It was my first year, so they wanted to show me the city. Girl, we were standing out in front of the hotel waiting for a cab. And that hawk came off that lake. And there's a video game where we used to play, and I think it was Mario video game, where the skeletons come, and when you pop the skeleton on the head, he just crumbles to the ground, like all the bones just crumble. That happened to me.
Yes.
That happened to me when that hawk came off.
Wait, what do you mean by hawk? Are you talking about a literal bird?
So it's the wind. No, it's the wind that comes off the icy lake. They call it the hawk. Right?
Oh, really?
Yes. But just as I was getting ready to climb into the cab, that's when the wind hit me.
Did you fall down?
No. I looked at those people. My hunger went away. Anything I might have wanted that was outside of that hotel convention center, I didn't want anymore. I turned around. They were like, where are you going? I was like, y'all can have that food. Y'all can have this experience. I'm never leaving the hotel or convention center for the rest of my stay. I turned right around and went back in. They were so mad. So what happened was, so the rest of my stay that first time, I never left the hotel or convention. I ate all convention center food. The second year, because this was my life now, right? The second year, I went with empty suitcases. I was already an Amazon shopper by then. So I had bought like Long Johns off Amazon and different warm underwear. And I came to Chicago this time because I couldn't even buy a coat in California that was warm enough to sustain me for the winter out there.
Yeah.
Where would I get it? So I got there with literally underwear and hygiene items in my suitcase, and I bought everything. I went shopping the first day. As soon as my plane landed, I went shopping. I bought a couple of coats. I bought winter wear.
Why do you need more than one coat?
Because you need a red one for when you're going for your snazzy night out. What do you mean?
Oh my God.
Still have a red wool coat.
We are so different.
Girl, that I pair with red lipstick. What do you mean?
No. Oh my God. I don't know what you mean.
So I bought everything I needed. And then from then on, I was ready for that Chicago. And then I had a ball. After the first year, it was amazing. But that first year, I thought I was going to die. I thought the hawk murdered me and God had favor on me and brought me back to life.
Oh, I would have loved to see your face when
people. I was like, what? There's nothing out here. I didn't eat. I didn't care. I did not care. They brought me back water and snacks. You know, they were like, this girl is not going to make it.
Oh my gosh.
But let's talk about yours. Like, what transitions are you going through, or what have you gone through?
So I was reflecting on this. I feel that, similar to you, my life has been full of transitions, mm-hmm. but it's a different type of transition. So whereas you've transitioned in place, like you've always been in California, but you've always been reinventing yourself mm-hmm. every quarter or every whatever. I mean, if we've been friends 10 years, you've probably reinvented yourself a good 3 to 4 complete pivots since mm-hmm. I've known you, meaning you've completely transitioned industries. You've transitioned multiple houses, but you've always been still sort of orbiting around the same area. Whereas mm-hmm. my story is defined by the geographical cure. So I moved from Middletown, Connecticut, where I went to college. I'm from mm-hmm. New Jersey. And then I went to New York. And then I lived in New York for 5 years-ish, 5 and a half. And then I moved to Portland, Oregon, because I thought that that would be the solution to the, I think, financial frustration I felt. I just felt like I was never going to get ahead in New York. I wasn't ambitious enough. I just wasn't ever going to be that type of person mm-hmm. and who could make it work. And as much as I loved it, I kind of got claustrophobic in there at the end. And then Portland, I died. I just could not take the weather. It was like, yeah. when I got there, the weather, I didn't, it's crazy because I had done all this research. I had a bunch of friends who lived in Portland. I had interviewed them all at length. I thought I was going to be picking wild blackberries off the streets and saving the world one plastic bag at a time. And I thought I was going to be like surrounded by these like-minded individuals. And it turned out I had this whole pros and cons list. But the problem with pros and cons lists is they are not weighted. And that weather, so it was like on the cons list, it's like, and it rains every day. No big deal, you yeah. know, but it was a huge deal. It was because not only does it rain basically every day, but it's not like a dramatic cleansing rain, like the rain that we were talking about yesterday that you're now experiencing for the first time.
Yes.
It was just like the sky is just spitting at you, just a little bit all day long.
That's funny the way you describe it.
It's horrible because you can't ever get comfortable because you're just damp. It's not going to yeah. start and then stop. It's not going to make beautiful sounds like the downpour sound. Nothing mm-hmm. like it. You don't even get that. So you get the rain all the time, but it's just like misting. But then the worst part of it is the cloud cover. You can yeah, never,
gloominess.
never see the sky. It's always cloud cover. And then I would try to escape to the coast. I thought, because when I was moving there, I was like, oh, it's perfect. The mountains are right here. The mm-hmm. ocean's right here. The beach. There's no beach. You drive to the ocean. First of all, it's like uphill. Mm-hmm. So you can't even like go above 50 miles an hour if you have like a certain type of car, because you're just driving like at a slight incline half the time, or I guess like up, down, takes mm-hmm. you an hour and a half to get there. And you think like, okay, get me out of here. Get me out of this cloud cover. And you try to escape to like the, they call it the coast because you can't call it the beach because it's not, you can't swim there. And it turns mm-hmm. out when you get there, it's 10 to 15 degrees colder than it is in Portland.
Oh, wow.
I know. And rainier. So it's never sunny at the beach, which is not the beach. It's the coast. So you can't even get out of it.
So it's rainier?
Rainier and way colder. Like 10 to 15 degrees colder.
Well, is there sand?
Yes. But why would you ever want to take your feet out into the freezing cold?
When it's cold. Yeah. Yep.
So the best thing you can do is you can sit on a log in a hoodie and just huddle together.
Oh, that just sounds depressing.
It's so depressing. I got so depressed, Bettina. I honestly was almost institutionalized. Like, I'm not joking. Oh. I was taking meds I had never taken before, but also they don't even prescribe a lot of meds in Portland because there's such a huge prescription drug problem.
I'm sure.
Yeah, it was really, really bizarre. But that's a story for another day. So I moved. Then I thought that LA must be the solution. And LA is just a hop, skip, and a jump from Portland. Mm-hmm. So I broke my lease. And I called my Uncle Bob, who lived in LA. Mm-hmm. And I said, can I come to live with you and also bring my girlfriend and 3 cats and our dog? And he thought about it for like 30 seconds and was like, sure.
Oh, Uncle Bob was the greatest.
I know. And he just let us move into his insane bachelor pad, which was like this, you know, whatever, three-bedroom house in Glendora, which is right outside LA. And it was amazing. It was it was probably the best time of my life.
Wow. So now, wait, was that when we met?
No. So when I first moved to LA, actually, it was right around, so I don't know what year it was, maybe sometime between 2011, something like that.
Okay.
And when I first moved to LA, it was right around Christmas time, because I remember my first temp job I got was selling bottle service at clubs for New Year's Eve. So it was the week between, and you know I don't go to clubs. I hate them. I went to this temp agency and they set me up with this job that happened between Christmas and New Year's. There was nobody in the city. So I'm driving from Glendora to, like, I think it was near Culver City probably. So I was driving clear across the city, but there was no traffic because nobody's there the week between Christmas and New Year's. So I was like, traffic here is not that bad. And then my job was to cold call people all day and try to convince them to come to certain clubs and to buy packages of bottle service. So like whatever, hundreds of dollar bottles of vodka. And every time I'd get someone on the phone and they'd ask me a question, they'd be like, well, which clubs are popping for New Year's Eve? And I would literally be like, I have no idea. I hate clubs. And also, I've never been to any of them. So I was a horrible salesperson.
I never envisioned you as a bottle girl.
I've only even been clubbing once in my life, I think. Maybe twice, when I was 18 years old. I hated
Seriously?
It. I hate.
Again, something that's an area where we're so different.
Because first of all, you have to get dressed up. You know, I don't like doing that.
Yep.
Second
that was my
of
favorite
all,
thing.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And then second of all, it's like a throbbing pit of predators is how I see it. So it's like disgusting men who are looking at you and they want to like come and rub up on you. But then you can't even get to know anybody because you can't hear a damn thing. So you're standing at the bar in this crowd of people pressing into you. And you know I'm short. So it's like, first of all, I hate people touching me. Second of all, I'm short. So people are pressing in, suffocating me. I'm trying to get a drink at the bar. But then if I even wanted to strike up a conversation with someone, it's like I can't hear a damn thing you're saying. It is my worst nightmare. My favorite thing to do is have deep conversations. So that's out. All you can do is just like see and be seen and like be touched, worst case scenario, which you will be. So I didn't convince anyone to come to the club.
I had theme music walking into the club back in the day.
What was it?
Usually something by Biggie Smalls.
Yes. Oh, I'm so glad you said that because I just named Nico Biggie. Since the pediatrician's always bothering me about his weight and Herschel's obsessed with Biggie. And then Maya can sing that song, Hypnotize. She sings it perfectly.
Oh my gosh,
she's
really?
2 years old. She sings it perfectly, except she says, instead of saying, I just love your flashy ways, she says, flashy wave. It's so cute. And then this morning she goes, this is why they're broke and we're so paid. I was like, you are a genius. You are a genius, genius two-year-old, and I'm obsessed with you.
That's awesome.
So I just named Nico Biggie Smalls literally just last week. I'm so glad you said
that.
So what was your theme song walking in?
So it could be a couple of things. It depended on the mood. So I had friends that were signed to Death Row Records and they would do like Hollywood. Girl. So they would do like Hollywood parties a lot, clubs a lot. And so I knew like DJs and stuff. So we would literally send word in that we were arriving. And so either, you know, I love it when you call me Big Papa or something. Like I would play a couple of different things. Like it just depended on my mood. But yeah.
Okay. Was this around the year? Give me what the year was. I want to guess the year. Do you have the year in your mind? I'm going to guess it.
I don't have the year in my mind, but I started clubbing when I was like 19.
Oh,
so we had fake IDs.
I was imagining.
We were the fake ID girls. So we had fake IDs and we would club between San Diego and Hollywood. So the Roxbury. Remember Prince had a club? You're probably too young to remember this, but Prince had a club in LA.
Really?
We used to
That's
hang
so
out
cool.
there. The House of Blues was one of my favorites because it was such an intimate place to see different artists. And so a lot of our friends that were signed to, you know, labels would put on shows. And so it was just, we just had fun. And it's so funny because I had my sister to babysit, my brother to babysit. And then I had a good friend that I could trust my kids with, you know? And so, honey, we were...
Oh, my God, because you had kids.
We were in the club, honey.
Because you had kids when you were 19. I forgot.
Yep.
You had two of them already.
Kids. I had two kids, so I was in the club. But you know what? It's funny because I feel like this is one of the things I talk about with my kids. Like, I tell my girls, like, travel. Like, travel now before you travel so you can have great stories to tell your kids. Because a lot of the things that I talk about with my girls now, because they're not club girls. They're so opposite from me.
Are they straight edge?
They're very straight edge. So they're not into clubbing. They're not into hanging out like that. They're just not. So I would, you know, share some of the things. I was like, girl, well, this is what me and your aunties did. You know, we did this. And they were like, oh yeah, mom. So no, we're not those people. But I do tell them, I'm like, you know, travel so that you can have these great stories to tell your kids. Yeah. I said, one of the reasons I knew I was ready to get married when I got married was because I had lived, like I had traveled, I had done the club thing. So I'm not this 40-something person that's still trying to live out, even though I had kids early, that's still trying to live out my teenage and early young adult years that were stolen from me because I was a young mother. No, that wasn't my life. So it was exciting.
Yeah. So that's not when I met you, because that was the first job I had. I did not sell one single person on going to the club, obviously. And then I had two different jobs, because I know which I'm getting to the job I met you at. So then I had two different jobs. One was working at a trailer house / record distribution company / film distribution company. And then that was during a time period I was still living with Uncle Bob, but I was really burning the candle at both ends. Like, I worked one job from 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Then I drove across town just from Beverly Hills. I think it was like right around Beverly Hills. It was like near that mall that's over there. What is that mall called? Century something? City? Whatever it is.
The Century City Mall.
Yeah. It was near there. And then I would go from there to Culver City, and it literally took me 45 minutes. That's like not very far at all.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would work there from 4:30 to I think 8:30. So I was working these really long hours, and I was drinking a lot. So both of these jobs were, because they were in the film industry, they had like those fridges full of beers, and drinking at work was basically allowed because it was advertising.
Mm-hmm.
So I burned out. I actually got fired from that first job, my full-time job. I got fired. And I don't know whether it was related to the fact that I would leave work and I would stand right in the residential streets that surrounded this office complex and just smoke joints right on the street where everybody else's cars were parked. And then I would get into my own car and take a nap.
That's hilarious. Wait, so now this is before weed was legal in California. So
no,
there
it was legal.
Still...
I had a weed card.
Oh, okay. Okay.
It was recent that weed had become legal, but I did have a card. It was, you know, I got it at the dispensaries. Mm-hmm. And then after I got fired from that job, that's when I started working that dental lab software job.
Okay.
And then that's when I moved out of Uncle Bob's and I lived in, you know, I don't want to say that word, Los. Police, don't say it the other
Los
way.
Los Feliz.
Don't say it.
Los Feliz.
Stop. That's not how you say it. So I met you because I then decided that California was the problem. Reason being, first of all, I was incredibly depressed. I think I was high off of that move for about a year. But then when you're really depressed and then the sunshine is like streaming in through the windows so aggressively, it feels like an assault on your senses. And it also makes you feel really guilty for not being outside all the time.
Yes.
You know? So I was really struggling because I thought the sunshine would solve everything, but it just ended up being like this cruel reminder of how much I just really wanted to isolate and stay inside and how unhappy I was. And it was like this contrast. I was so unhappy in Portland, but then I was happy for like a year just because like, you can just get high off of a move like that. But then I just, the drinking accelerated even more and I wasn't connecting with people and I just was really struggling still, you know? And so then I decided that the West Coast was the problem. And I had this whole list of reasons. The seasons, the lack of seasons was really a problem.
Yeah.
There were things about it I didn't like. For example, what's that red, dark red stuff that's always on the highway? Is that blood? Is that car accidents blood that has not able to be sprayed off because it's like baking into, like, why is that there? I think it's because it never rains.
Oh.
I think it's because it never rains. Like, what is that? I think it's blood, Bettina. I'm not joking.
So
whenever
funny.
You see
I
that.
I think it's like car oil.
No, it's blood.
From accidents.
So it's from accidents. You're right about that. It's blood that they can't get off the road.
That's
because
so
it never
crazy.
Rains. And then listen to this. I just, in my mind at that time, I was positive it's blood, and I'm not sure. I'm still convinced otherwise. But here's the other thing. So in my neighborhood, in Los Feliz, I would walk around. I had a dog at the time, another dog. We had now two dogs. And I would walk around with the dogs or dog, and everywhere reeks of urine. Not just dog urine, but people urine, Bettina. And why does it reek of urine? Because it never rains. The same reason as the blood on the highway.
You're
it
so
never
funny.
Rains. So every dog that has peed here every day, five times a day, we're all just still experiencing the residue of that because there's nothing coming to wash that away.
Yeah.
So it's like you're just being assaulted with these really intense smells of urine baking on the sidewalk and baking in the bush. And like that was another thing I hated. And then the last thing that really got to me is that you can never drink soup when you live in LA.
You can never drink what?
Because it's not soup. Because it's not cold enough. You know?
That's so
it's hot.
Funny.
Hot as hell. And then also the sun in LA like shines in at this weird angle. It's a similar situation in Portland where it's like you can kind of never see the sun because it's refracted in a million directions off the dust.
Oh my gosh.
So the sky wasn't satisfying me.
This hurts my feelings about how you're talking about my home.
And the seasons don't exist. So it's like you're in just Groundhog's Day. Like instead of like, okay, let's cool it down now. Let's have some soups. Let's look at some beautiful leaves changing. It's hot every day, all day. Now it's hazy hot. Now it's white hot. Now it's this hot. I remember I saw somebody put Christmas lights up on a cactus and I was like, I'm going to be sick.
Were you done?
Yeah, I
done,
think that was
then?
In the last year. The last year I spent it, I spent Christmas. You know that
you saw
hotel
the Christmas
that,
lights on the cactus and bought a plane ticket?
Yeah. I knew I was leaving when I saw that because that's disgusting. But the last Christmas I spent, I think it was the last one I spent in Los Angeles. You know that hotel it's over by the stadium, so it's in downtown, and it's got a pool on the roof. Do you know that one?
Mm-hmm.
I spent Christmas there with my friend who was in from Las Vegas doing Adderall with strangers. And I was like, this is the least Christmassy thing. I felt like it felt shameful. It felt dirty. Like to be in a pool on Christmas doing Adderall with strangers. Like it was so disgusting to me.
Yeah.
So I had to get out of there and I did come back and I moved to Philadelphia. And I think I either met you at the tail end of, I won't even remember it, honestly. I was drinking so much at that time. I don't even remember my goodbye party. I remember it was at my guitar player Dan's house. I remember there was an invitation. I remember Uncle Bob was there and so were all my friends, but I don't even remember one moment of that party. I was blackout.
Wow.
Yep. And then I drove back across the country with a trailer hitched to my car at like, you know, 25 miles an hour. Because again, with the car and the inclines.
We get hot in the summer, yeah. Hot in the summer. The wind it don't stand no chance. It's hot in the summer, yeah. Hot in the summer.
All of those transitions were really artificial because they were just location changes.
Yeah.
And they were all symptoms of the same problem. And the problem was that I was not at home within myself. And so I was trying to change the external circumstances to kind of make myself happy or to get something or to get something external that was an inside job. But I wanted to, on a more serious note, talk about what has been the biggest transition in my life. And the biggest transition in my life was losing Uncle Bob. That was the biggest transition in my life because that happened in 2021. Mm-hmm. And Uncle Bob, you know, I lived with him in LA, but he also came to live with my parents. So when I finally crashed back in the summertime. So when I crashed back from Philadelphia, I was in Philadelphia for like a year and a half, and then I just hit bottom. I came back to New Jersey. I got sober. For all those years that I lived in New Jersey, Uncle Bob was always still in my life because he, at that time, had sold his house in California, and he loved that book, Travels with Charlie, and he was traveling around the country in an RV, a motorhome. And so would always go down. His like spot was New Orleans. That's where he settled in. I would always go down and visit him in New Orleans, and he would spend the entire summer at my parents' house, which was where I was also parked since I had hit bottom and was struggling to get sober at that time. So he was still this really, really huge part of my life. And then he got sick very suddenly in 2021.
Yeah.
And he died 1 month later. And
wow. It
ripped my heart out. And I knew I was going to cry in this episode.
Oh.
What he represented to me. So when I lived with him in California, like, I was such a mess of a person.
Mm-hmm.
I would be so drunk sitting outside and like chain smoking. Uncle Bob smoked too. He was just so old school. We would be like chain smoking under the palapa every night outside.
Mm-hmm.
We would go to his friend's house. I would just drink all their alcohol and like be so drunk. And Uncle Bob, you would hear the ice cubes hitting the bottom of his cup at 5 on the dot every day. But he never drank to excess, ever. Like, he was just one of those cocktail at 5 p.m. people. Like,
yeah.
The environment that he created was, like, almost like an old Hollywood.
Yeah.
He had all those movie posters everywhere. He'll put out the cheeses and the snacks and the little, like, fancy things just ever so artfully designed. He was blasting oldies.
Wow.
He was obsessed with the hits from, like, the 40s through any time. He just loved the hits. That song Upside Down by Diana Ross, he introduced me to that when I was, like, 13.
Boy, you turn me inside out. I love it.
Yeah. He introduced me to that song.
Wow.
So many songs because he just created an environment of leisure and joy. But what he mostly created for me is just unconditional love.
Yeah.
And I had never had that. Never. Because you know that, like, I didn't feel like that growing up.
Yeah.
And I followed this man around like a little puppy dog. I worshipped this man. Like, I loved him so much, but he never tried to fix me.
Mm-hmm.
He never tried to fix me.
He just loved you.
I knew I wanted to talk about this today because, like, in the morning, I had this huge blowout fight with my partner. This is one thing about getting up at 5:30 in the morning is you have a lot of stuff can happen before 7. You know how it's like there's so much stuff building that you haven't said, but once the apple cart is knocked over, it's like, all right, well, let's throw some apples then. How about this one? And how about this one? So it's like you can get all these things off your chest because it's like the cart's already turned over and it's like stuff that needs to be said. So after that, I was just sitting there and I just thought, I just was like hit by this like grief wave about Uncle Bob. And I don't know if it was just because like I was already in like an emotional place, but Uncle Bob, like, when I bought this house in New Jersey, like, he would come over because he was at my parents still.
Mm-hmm.
And because when I moved here, he helped me. And like, he has like a specific seat that's his seat at my kitchen island. He installed like my garage door opener, my cloths that are in my cabinet were given to me by him. My salad bowls were given to me by him. So it's like every single thing, like he's just all over this house. And so when he passed away, I remember having conversations with him sitting outside my parents' house where I was like, you just can't ever die because I'll die, you know? Mm. And he did. And I didn't get to say goodbye to him before he died because I was supposed to go to Costa Rica. And like, it was just this horribly timed thing where like,
I remember that.
That was like that's the thing I probably regret the most of my life. Like I was in charge at work because my boss was on vacation and all of a sudden things took a turn and he was like going into hospice and I couldn't decide what to do. Like I couldn't decide whether to cancel my trip. I couldn't decide to go down there. Like it was like there was all this money on the line and it's like I regret that. That's the biggest mistake I've ever made is not going down to see him. I was like, I think I was so stressed at work and I was like, I don't know whether to cancel this trip. I was like asking everybody and everybody say like, yeah, no, you need this trip. I ended up booking the plane ticket to go down there to, I had seen him already because when he got sick, I went 2 days later down to New Orleans and to see him in the ICU. And like, I got him from the ICU and I stayed with him until he came out of the ICU. So like, I had seen him, but I wanted to go back down there with him because I knew he was dying. But I couldn't process that because I couldn't lose him. And then I decided to go down, but it was too late. I decided to go on the Friday because I couldn't decide what to do because my boss was on vacation and I was in charge and like, all those things just seem like such stupid reasons to me now. It's like, you know, screw work. Like, why was that even a consideration? Like, you could have seen him more time and I didn't. But basically, when that happened, so you were a part of this story. So when that happened, like, I've had, like, people die before, but never like that. So he never was like, oh, like, I'm trying to fix Jen. Like I was like at the worst of my entire life every single time I was with him, and like he just like palled around with me all the time, and that's kind of like what I didn't have with my family is like just that consistency of I just love you anyway and you don't have to like show up a certain way for me. And he was the only person that I felt like so comfortable like being with all the time.
Yeah,
if he would go out for a cigarette, I would go out for a cigarette. Like I just followed him around everywhere he went, and I was like in my late 30s already, so it's like I just followed him around like a puppy dog. And when he passed away, like I've never had something like that. I was sober by this point already, but I didn't have my kids. You know, he never got to meet Maya. Like Maya was born 1 year later. And he never got, he saw me get sober. So like he did, I knew him for years when I was sober. So I went from being this drunk disaster who he did not try to fix to being sober. And like, he didn't love me any more or less. When I made amends to him, he was like, get out of here with that. And I needed to make amends.
Right.
Not only did I steal his alcohol all the time, but one time I like humiliated him at this pool party of his friends in Rancho Cucamonga. I like yelled at all these people and then puked into the wind in his Lexus, puked all over him and the car. And he just never said one word about it.
Wow.
He just was like the picture of equanimity. And so here's the transition. I know I go on and on and on about him because
okay. I love it. I love it.
He's just like my person in life, and we had nothing in common. Like he was a gun slinging libertarian. He told me he had a bone to pick with Black Lives Matter, and I was like, let's get into it. It was like we were opposite.
You're ready to fight.
Yeah, I was ready to fight. Some of the stuff he said about women, I was like, are you kidding me? Like, but like we loved each other, you know, like we were not similar. Like he'd be like, do you want to go to the gun range today? And I was like, no. And I was like, oh, like I'm celebrating at a meeting. You want to come? And he's like, not really. We just had a really like honest relationship. He was not a people pleaser. And also I want to say he gave me my mantra. One of my mantras. So when we were living in, I'd be remiss to not say this. When we were living in California during the like cigarette smoking, gravy, me gaining 20 pounds between the alcohol and the food he was serving up, like during that time period, which was one of the best time periods of my life, When I got fired from that job that I mentioned, I was like going crazy because I was like, what's everybody gonna think? Like they're gonna be wondering where I went. Like, what will they be saying? I never got to explain. You know how you just think that you're so much more important than you are?
Yes.
And
yes.
I also fancied
the company's
myself.
Gonna fall apart when I leave.
Yes. And also I was just like, I never got to defend my honor. Like, they just were basically mm-hmm. like, they brought me into this room. They were like, it is not a good fit, and let us show you the door. And I had friends there, and I just was so worried about my reputation. And I was also thinking myself so spiritual. Like I said, I was always getting drunk and reading The Power of Now.
Yes.
And Uncle Bob, who did not like to speak in a lot of depth or any really about any emotion at all, he said, he's like, I have a mantra for you. Nobody cares about you.
Wow. I
know. But he didn't say it in a way that was like, nobody cares. Like, not in the sense that like my family doesn't care about me,
like,
or
get
my friends
over
don't
yourself.
Care about me, but just like, nobody's thinking about you.
Yeah.
Nobody. And that was like, I just stopped and I just laughed. I was like, oh my God, like, thank you. I mm-hmm. needed to be liberated from my own self-centeredness and my own self-consciousness that I've just suffered mm-hmm. from my whole life. So now, even today, I went to a gym class and I was 15 minutes late, obviously. And I was just repeating to myself as I went in, I was like, nobody cares about you. Nobody cares about you.
Oh.
You know? Like, it's okay. Nobody's looking at you. Just do you. Like, I needed that class. And so I'd rather, like, go for the last 45 minutes than be self-conscious about, like, what are people going to think?
Yeah.
If I'm walking in the sleep, whatever, you know? But here's what I did when he passed away. My life had really been spiraling out of control as far as like basically how many things I was trying to do. I didn't have kids yet, but I had a lot of friends and a lot of sponsees and a lot of too many social connections that were being stretched too thin. Because I think mm-hmm. I had approached the idea of service and networking really alcoholically for many years, and I had built up too many friendships that I couldn't maintain them all, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And what I did is when Uncle Bob passed away, I decided that I was going to go back to the times where it was almost like a landline time. So I was in Costa Rica, so we had pushed back our trip so we could go to see Uncle Bob, but then he died right before we were about to get on the plane. It was mm-hmm. really sad. And I was journaling, just like writing and writing and writing and writing, because I was just like, my heart was so heavy. Like, I would just fall to my knees at all type of random times during the day. Like, it was just too much to, mm-hmm. you know, I've just never experienced that. I've never experienced that type of pain. And I was just like, how can I like take him with me? You know, how can I like wow. take him into my heart and like take everything he taught me about life?
Mm-hmm.
Part of what was killing me about having that many relationships is I would be trying to do one thing and then somebody would be like texting me something, like some meme or something. It's like, I don't even really do social media. So it was like, I feel like my attention was always being torn, or somebody was calling me or texting. Like, it was just like, I felt so torn in so many different directions. And I just said to myself, I'm like, I need to grieve this.
Yeah.
And so I made a decision through the writing that I did that week that I was going to basically like cut everybody out of my life except for 5 people, because I needed time to grieve and to process.
Mm-hmm.
There's this Taiwanese woman that I knew from this job I used to work in New York that when her dad died, there's like some tradition that her culture did where it's like she read this thousands of word thing every single night for a year.
Wow.
And that was their tradition. And that really stuck with me because I thought, wow, like this is the ritualization of grief.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to read this crazily long thing, but you're going to do it every single day and just day by day by day. Like your load is going to be lifted, but you have to ritualize it. You know, you have to take an action.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't believe I'm still crying. Like, how long have I been crying?
It's okay.
He had such a huge impact on me.
That's good, though.
And so I decided, I just was like, I want to enjoy my life like him. I want to be living, like, in a really simple, joyful way. Like, he was just unshakable. He had so much equanimity. He didn't get involved in the dramas of others, as you can tell with
yeah.
my, you know, mess of a person. He just didn't get involved in that. He didn't mind if you were a conspiracy theorist or a total loony bin. And it's not that he didn't kind of like roll his eyes at you. It's just that he didn't invest himself in that. He didn't waste any right. of his emotions on it. And he would just read a crime novel while his yard just lay in a state of half completion. And he just didn't mm-hmm. care. Like, he just didn't have that neurotic peace that my whole family has where it's like, go, go, go.
Mm-hmm.
He just would take a nap in the middle of the day just because he felt like it. I was like, how are you like this? Like, I mean, mm-hmm. he was retired, so it's a different thing. Like, he was in a different phase of his life, but I wanted that. And so the biggest transition is I decided I just can't do this anymore. I can't live like I'm living. I need to take 1 year to grieve this man and write to him every day and cry over him whenever like the wave hits me, you know? And I did. And you were one of those people that I kept because I kept five people. I kept my two best friends, my aunt, who was his sister, and mm-hmm. my like spiritual guru type of person. And that's it. And you. And the reason why I kept you was because you lifted me up, you know? And it's not like it wasn't necessarily anything Uncle Bob specific. It was just that I couldn't let you go because you are such a positive life force in my life that I just knew that whatever I was going through, you'd always be there for it, you know? So it wasn't, I don't like specifically remember talking to you about Uncle Bob. I just remember knowing that I would be accepted and that I just had to have you in my life because you're always helping me to stay centered, but also to keep moving and to keep moving forward to doing whatever I want to do and whoever I want to be. And so if I told you wow. I now want to be living a lot more like Uncle Bob, I don't want to be living in anxiety and depression anymore. I want to be living in the now. And mm-hmm. that's what I want to work on. And I don't want to text and I don't want to be reliant on my phone and I don't want to have as many relationships, then mm-hmm. I know that you'd say like, okay, how do we get from A to B? You mm-hmm. know? So that was just something that was understood about you. And that's what happened. And I'm sure
wow.
everybody's got somebody, maybe not everybody, maybe not yet, but it's like when you lose that person who you just like, you didn't want to lose that one.
Yeah.
Like, there's yeah. not someone else like that. So that was, like, my biggest transition. And I don't really, like, honestly cry about it that much. Like, maybe I'm in an emotional, like, a very emotional state today. Mm-hmm. But, like, it's coming from a really genuine place. Like, he was my person.
Is it over now? Tell me who you become. Fading into what we are done. Can we go back to those days when everything felt so right? Or are we just chasing shadows in the middle of the night?
And you know what's so beautiful? Two things stand out to me is just how I always say that what I didn't get in family, God gave me in friends. So I feel like God gave you Uncle Bob.
He was like my father figure.
Yeah.
Like, I love my dad, but like he was like some other parent figure that was yeah. there to accept me. And I didn't feel yeah. self-acceptance. And he just always accepted me exactly how I showed up.
Even when I was puking on him, literally. Even when we don't have the language to say, can you send me this? He already knows. So I think that's beautiful. And that just made that story. We've never talked about Uncle Bob to this depth. Yeah. And so I'm so appreciative of this conversation. But that story just made It's Tuesday even more important and even more cemented.
It is Tuesday.
It's Tuesday. But, and so that just made, it's funny because one of our listeners mentioned that we mentioned Uncle Bob in episode 1. And she said, okay, so I fell in love with Uncle Bob in episode 1. And then when you guys came back with It's Tuesday, she was really in love. And so now when she hears this, oh my gosh. So
I'll never stop talking about Uncle Bob.
No, when she hears the Uncle Bob story, she's going to love that. And I love it because I didn't know that he was such an angel for you. I knew I had an idea, but not to this degree, you know?
Everybody. He was just, he was like one of those guys that would just like show up to paint your garage just because he had a service heart. He was just that guy, you know?
Yeah.
Someone who was like a friend of my girlfriend at the time who needed a place to stay. And this is after we had already moved out of Uncle Bob's house and she was just hard up. And she had this son who was also, I guess she was a single mom. And Uncle Bob, just like when I asked him to come with my girlfriend and all those animals, he just didn't even think about it. And he's like, of course she can come and live with me. And so after we moved out, she moved in with her son. And her son was like this very odd kid. He was just an odd kid. And I was, you know, always kind of like, oh, okay, this is a strange situation. But I know that that's just how Uncle Bob was. And then when Uncle Bob passed away, the son and this woman ended up writing to my partner at the time. And they said, you know, Uncle Bob changed, I'm not going to say his name, the kid his life.
Oh my god.
He taught him the fundamentals of cooking. He taught him to do bonsai. Uncle Bob was like a big bonsai guy. And he said that he still does bonsai to this day and loves cooking. And so he took this kid and then he just helped him to find something that he could really apply himself to and
love. I love it.
You know, he was a really wonderful person.
I love how that's all supposed to happen. It was all supposed to happen. And there's this one guy, and I know it sounds crazy, but there's this one teacher that I follow. And he was just an amazing teacher. He and his wife died young. He always said that they would die together. They actually died in a plane crash accident. But it was like, I'm listening to one of his teachings recently, and I was like, I can see why he died. And it sounds morbid, but I can see his life purpose being fulfilled. And so it was time for him to go. Because if you were teaching at this level, he was so far ahead of his time, however many years ago that teaching was, it was like he was done. And that's how I feel like when you talk about how Uncle Bob impacted lives, especially yours, it was like he was done. Like his work here was done. And it was time for him to go, even though that's hard.
But I do believe that, Bettina. Like, I really do. Like, he was retired for many, many, many years doing his thing. Like, the month before he died or a couple months before he died, he was on, I don't know if it's called Dauphin Island in Alabama. Like, just having cocktails with his friends on an island in Alabama, like just a couple months before he died. Like, he just kind of exited stage left 1 month from when he got sick to when he left this earth. And then meanwhile, like, he gave me to this day everything that I'm practicing, everything that I'm trying to do has to deal with more fully inhabiting this moment, not getting caught up in other people's energies, having equanimity, like taking a moment to pause. Like, I'm not there yet, but he's basically just imprinted on me, here is the model for life. And I don't know if it's because he was in Vietnam when he was a teenager or what happened, but like, nothing shook this guy. Nothing.
And I think that's beautiful too, because just to show how you're living out the imprint of Uncle Bob, a few weeks ago or a couple months ago when I had an incident with someone that was close to me, I loved how you responded. You said, oh, it sounds like she's going through a lot. We're going to send prayers for her. When in the past, I would have needed you to jump on the bandwagon of let's be mad at this person. I don't need that now at this.
You wouldn't get that.
But I love how I don't need that at this stage in my life. But I was also not expecting your beautiful, you know, even response, where it was like, oh, the compassion that you showed for someone else who I felt like in the moment was hurting me, right?
Yeah, hurt people, you know?
Yeah, but that compassion just came from you and it set the tone for my response. So it was just like, wow, I love that. And I needed to see that. And now I can see where that stems from. That's an Uncle Bob thing, you know? And so
yes,
I think that's beautiful.
No. Yes and no. It definitely, so Uncle Bob just wasn't, he was more the equanimity was more just like he was like, I'm not getting involved and I'm not shaken by it.
Mm-hmm.
Because he is also still from my family, we are not warm in that he was the warmest, but you know, they're not going to delve into any type of real softness. There is still a certain business. Like, I would beg him to tell me the last time he cried. I was like, when have you cried? When was it? Tell me about it. Like, I was always trying to get at this emotional side that it didn't really exist outside of a sentimentality.
Mm-hmm.
We would watch Lawrence Welk. I don't know if you know that show.
I remember.
It is so cheesy. Like, I would be counting down the seconds. He would be like, well, have you heard this little ditty? But I just loved hanging out with him. So I would just sit next to him on the couch, just whatever he wanted to do, you know? But he would get really wistful and like sentimental at these older songs or these older movies.
Yeah.
And that's where his emotion would come into play. It would never, my whole family, all the men, at least the ones I know that I'm the closest with, would never show any type of emotion ever. So there was a detachment. There was always a distance. It was like a do the right thing. You know, it was a show up to paint someone's house, not like an emotional component to it. It was more of like an acts of service type of thing that was where that kindness came. So like, I'm not going to be
How can I show up for you?
Yes, in action. And for me, it's not really about like, hey, let me fix your car or whatever. I don't like possess that type of skill, but it's more about, hey, how can I lighten your load by helping you to see this differently? You know, I'm like a emotional intelligence person, and that wasn't how he was, which is why it's kind of amazing we had the relationship we did, because I don't think we ever really had a deep conversation in our life, you know? That's what made that relationship so magical, is like we were not the same.
I think that speaks a lot about you and your ability to love beyond commonality. I think that's one of the things that I struggle with in intimate relationships.
Tell me more.
I struggle with that because it's like, if I don't feel like me and my person have a lot in common, then I get bored. So if I can't have these deep conversations, because I call myself a bit of a sapiosexual, so if I can't have these deep conversations that stimulate me intellectually, then it's like I kind of lose interest, you know?
What's a sapiosexual? What is that?
The person that needs to be stimulated, have the mind stimulated in order to feel, you know, all of the whole sexual tension. And so with that being said, it was just interesting for me to be in relationship. And then once you get past the honeymoon phase, then you enter this space where it's like, okay, if I take this off the table and that off the table, then what do we have? If I stop doing my dog and pony show, look what I can do. Look what I can do. If I stop doing all of these things, then what do we have? And I am the person that really needs those deep, intimate conversations. And I remember years ago, you and I had a conversation where it was like, well, I should be satisfied with the fact that I'm not getting this from my partner, but I do have friends in my life that I can get these conversations from. And if I could let that spill over, so it's kind of like that 80-20
rule. Need is met, but not by your primary partner.
Just not by your partner. It's being met. So be satisfied with the fact that it's being met. It's just not by your intimate
partner.
That's
not you though. Yeah.
That's not me.
That's not what you want.
And I can't. And so, but I do, this section has been so amazing because I did not expect it to go there, and you're amazing. And I love being able to see your heart, because I don't know, I think in all the years that I've known you, I've seen you cry like 3 times.
I know, I don't cry that often.
You and don't. I'm a total something crier.
You know what it is? I don't cry that often. But what it is that I think the reason why I don't cry that often is because I never felt comfortable showing emotions. And so I do this thing where it's like masking. You just keep your face in a resting position, kind of like no matter what is going on the outside. And so, but the thing about Uncle Bob that broke through that is I just want to share one more thing about him, how he just never tried to fix me. Cause I was just one of those people that's always struggling. And one time I went down to New Orleans to go visit him because I was thinking about moving there. I was always thinking about moving there. I'm in love with that city. I went there the first time alone when I was 18. I have family that's from down around there. So I was exposed to it really young. And I went there to go stay with him while I made up my mind about whether I wanted to move down there. And I was very recently sober. And I went through a really, really rough time when I was down there because I just kind of let myself fall into a really deep depression. And I was staying with him at the motorhome, and he didn't try to pull me out of it. Like, we just sat there together in his tiny little motorhome, and he would make me this coffee with this foam on top, and he would come in. And so when I woke up, he would hand me the coffee with the foam, and he would turn on Golden Girls on the TV. Because he knew I loved Golden Girls, and so did he. And then we would just sit together in silence and just watch episode of SVU after episode of SVU after episode of SVU, like, all day without saying a word. There's no one else I would feel that comfortable. And I was in a really bad spot in my head when I was down there. And he just held that space for me. So it's like, even though it wasn't a, like, let's talk about this in depth type of thing, he gave me something, that feeling of safety and like, I'm not judging you and I'm not trying to change you and I just love you and I'll even want to hang out with you like this at your worst. And I've never, ever leaned into that feeling or sunk into that feeling except for with him. So I think through his actions, like, he just showed me something I had never received in my life.
He was a beautiful human being.
Yeah.
And the fact that you've mentioned New Orleans as many times as you have, when you were talking about the urine smell in Los Feliz, that's how I feel about New Orleans.
Really?
Oh my gosh. It smells like urine and vomit. And
so I don't go to Bourbon Street though, or like, if anything, I'll go to Frenchman Street, but I would never in any city go to the tourist hotspot.
Okay.
So when I have been going there for the last 15 years, I hang out in Metairie, actually. I hang out with local people that live there, and that's where I hang out. And I go to, like, the bomb supermarket with the crazy prepared food section that's got, like, the crawfish Monica, and it's got, like, there's, like, a way to do New Orleans where it's, like, you live in New Orleans.
Now, I have had the best food ever there.
Oh, my God, it's insane. And then Uncle Bob lived in the 9th Ward, where it's, like, you would go down the street and get the most insane shrimp po' boy you've ever seen at this outdoor, like, trailer park. So that's where he landed. So we were always outside the city. He was in the city, but he was in the 9th
Ward.
So it's not in the quarter. It's not in the downtown. Quarter. So there was nothing like that.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Well, I want to switch this up a little bit. This has been amazing. And thank you for just sharing him with me.
Thanks for holding that space for me.
Absolutely. And one thing I say about grief, you have to do it your way. There's no one that can tell you when it should be over, how you should do it, how this should go.
Yeah.
Do your thing.
I still think about him every single day. I still, like, every day that I'm in my best self, I ask both him and my version of a higher power. I just say, like, guide me. Help me, show me what to do, give me messages, show me intuitive thoughts. The other half of it is always Uncle Bob. Help me enjoy each moment, you know?
Yeah. So beautiful. I love it. Well, really quickly, I want to go over the life focus question, which is embracing change while maintaining friendships. And how do we do that? And I think that it's so easy for friendships to take a back seat when you're going through life transitions. It's very hard to maintain the friendships. And because those seasons, there are seasons when your priority isn't necessarily on maintaining the friendship. But what I can say about you is you have a way of bringing me outside of the immediacy and the you know, bigness of whatever transition I'm going through, and to get into these moments like this where we can have these conversations. And I think that's been it's been your ability to take me out of the feeling of impossible of whatever I was dealing with. And that is what always made me want to come out of the cycle. Sometimes you get in a cycle when you're in transition where you feel like you need to give it all you have, all of your attention, all of your conscious resources, all of your intellect, everything that you have to throw at this thing, you've got to throw at it, right? And you have a way of bringing me out, because I was always excited to talk to you because we've never had, as you can see through these conversations, we've never had like a lull. You know, notice how when we talk, there's never a lull where there's nothing to say, nothing mm-hmm. to do, because that's when I want to exit stage left.
Really?
And so there's an excitement that comes with it. But then also I always learn something. And then you were consistent. There is a consistency with you. Like I can depend on you calling me, you know, every week, even when I'm in that place. Remember how you talked about how when you're not at your best, how you would avoid phone calls.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, it was almost as if God would put you on my heart, like you need to call, you know, but mm-hmm. with you, I know I would do the same thing. It's not something that I would admit to usually, but I would do the same thing if I'm not my best, because it's easy to just get under the covers and throw it over your head when you're not. You know, doing the whole dog and pony show, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I respected you. I respected your time. I respected your care and support for me. So I always would answer.
Mm-hmm.
And when I answered, I was never let down. So it was easy for me to, you know, to maintain the friendship while embracing all the change and all of that. But it was you. It wasn't me. It's so weird.
Wow. Thank you for telling me that. I didn't know you were the avoidant type when you were going through something or doing something. So why were you avoidant? You were just so dedicated to whatever you were pursuing? Or what was the reason why you would let friendships fall by the wayside?
It wasn't that big. It was that I felt like the people that knew me and loved me understood that we didn't have to be in each other's face all the mm-hmm. time mm-hmm. to maintain the friendship. So I have friends that I've been friends with for 30 years, but we probably talk a couple times a year, probably meet for cocktails once or twice a year. I might visit them at their home once a year. They might visit me at my home once a year. And the friendship is as strong as it was when we first started and we're hanging out and traveling all the time.
That's the nature of adult friendship, I think, that frequency.
Yeah. So I just didn't feel like, I didn't think it was a thing, but there was something with you that allowed me to grow a friendship even in the midst of change. And I didn't know, I probably should have been doing that with my other relationships, because what happens is, even though we're great, like I don't know who my friend is about to marry. I have never met the guy, mm-hmm. you know, because I haven't been around like that, mm-hmm. like that, mm-hmm. you know? So there is a little bit of growing apart, or I didn't get invited to the Greece trip last year, you know, because I'm not in the immediate headspace because I'm, you know, I'm over here doing my own thing and transitioning from California to another state. So, but I think there's an intentionality about you that I've been learning from, and it makes me want to. So one of the things I said I was going to do when I get back to California, there's a list of 15 people that I want to be intentional about having coffee a cocktail with, because I don't want to have my other friendships go by the wayside because, you know, I'm so far out of step with what's happening in your life that you don't even think of me at top of mind when major changes are happening in your life, you know?
Yeah.
So
I love that you're saying that, because I've been thinking so much lately about the frequency of contact of friendships. So my answer to that question would be, again, we're opposites. Like, I could never live without my female friends. The second I'm having a thought about anything that's emotionally unsettling to me, I'm on the phone with them. But that was trained into me because, like I said earlier, I've always been the type, I was raised on sleepovers and secret sharing and all the traditional ways of female bonding, mirroring mm-hmm. and et cetera. But when I got sober, it was basically, I don't want to say beaten into me because that sounds violent, but I was trained to, when I have a thought, you know, of whatever, of drinking, of some type of emotional drunkenness, I should make a phone call because it's like move a muscle, change a thought. And I always thought I would be bothering people if I were to call them, especially if I'm calling because I'm not in a good place. And over time, because that's the way this community operates, which is that you are really encouraged to make phone calls to other people who are in recovery, over time, and especially through other people calling me and me being so happy to help, and in fact, it making my day to receive a phone call from someone who was struggling and to help them, mm-hmm. I developed a really interrelational way of giving and receiving support. And also, I am with a partner who is more of a kind of traditional man's man who doesn't mm-hmm. necessarily receive me emotionally in the same way that women do. And that's not a knock on him. It's just like mm-hmm. women are different. So mm-hmm. the way that you just held that space for mm-hmm. me, I'm much lighter now because you just let me talk forever and just get everything out and just held that space so beautifully. And it's like, that's not anything any man I know has ever done for me. And I love so many men in my life, but when I say to them, like, this is what I'm going through and blah, 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 if I go on for more than 2 minutes and then their response is like, that sucks.
Or you can see in their eyes that Elvis has left the building.
Or
they're sitting there.
Yeah, yeah. Or sometimes they're really responsive, but that's the exception to the rule. Mm-hmm, I do have that one best friend I have that, like, him and I can actually, like, really talk all night long. Mm-hmm. I haven't tested him as far as, like, receiving me emotionally ever, just because we have a bit of a rocky past. And I'm not sure if that's something that he has the capacity, but it is, like, something more where we can have a more female-type conversation where it's just like, we'll never run out of things to say to each other, just like you and me. You know, I mm-hmm. do have that with that person. But I've been thinking about the frequency of friends. So I have, because I was trained into that behavior of whenever I feel some type of way, my first action that's going to translate into is I'm going to get on the phone. I'm going to run my thinking by someone else. Hopefully they're going to call me out on something or draw my attention to something that is like a problem, like a me problem. Like, am mm-hmm. I in a lack of acceptance? You know, like, I think a lot of my fight with my partner this morning or our disagreement is just really a lack of acceptance on my part that he is exactly where he needs to be right now. And I cannot accept that. I cannot mm-hmm. accept that. And the times when I'm the most disturbed, I've been taught when I'm disturbed, it's me because I am not accepting what is.
Mm-hmm.
Resistance to what is. How futile is that? It's so stupid.
Yeah.
Like, but I just, it's that like thing where I just always think I know better. I want it to be different or whatever. So, you know, I have these friends, these female friends who do fill that need for me. And mm-hmm. there's three of them that I speak to on a weekly basis on average. Four, including you, that I speak. Now we speak even more than that usually. But
yeah.
Four people and I speak to them on a weekly basis. And that is more than enough. Like, I could do two or even mm-hmm. one who I speak to on a weekly basis, and that would be probably more than enough. But then I have all these other friends where if I see them once a year, I love that so much. It's like, you know, before I got sober, my frequency of catching up with my friends was closer to quarterly for everybody. There wasn't anybody that I talked to with any regularity. So
mm-hmm.
That was more, I just thought like, this is the nature of adult friendship, but it made me feel really lonely because when I was in college, it was like, I basically lived with all my friends. When I was in my 20s, I always had roommates or whoever. It was just a constant party and there was always somebody to talk to. So it was a rough transition. But mm-hmm. now, because you can only have so many people in your life, especially when you are pursuing things and you want to, you know, pursue your own goals and work on yourself and whatever, you know, build your relationships with your family and your kids, like life fills in the meantime. Mm-hmm. And then if I can get that once a year with somebody, Oh my God. That's why I'm trying to actually ritualize things like Memorial Day. It's like, can we like always meet up every Memorial Day? Can we always celebrate Easter together? Because if I could just get you like 30 more times until we die, that would be enough.
That's why I was saying that coming to New Jersey is a priority for me right now, because I was reflecting a couple weeks ago on how comfortable I was staying
in
your home.
And I force you to do nothing. You do realize that, right? I was listening back to something where you're like, so you made somebody uncomfortable because they're like, you can't do nothing around you.
Mm-hmm.
I forced you into a state of doing nothing.
But
right?
I was comfortable. It was a beautiful, it was a beautiful, beautiful comfort thing.
It
felt like being at home, which I needed it to feel like that.
Let's eat sandwiches and potato chips. That's what I like to do. Do you like to do that?
I do. I really do.
You do. Lightly
and
salted.
So, lightly salted. You know me. My daughters are like, Mom, that's like eating. I'd rather
Nobody
not have
eats
chips.
That.
How do you rather not have chips?
Maybe like diabetics or somebody who was advised by their doctor. Like their doctor was like, I'm sorry, you have to stop eating chips. Okay, you can have those lightly salted if you are going to eat them occasionally.
I'm 100% healthy and prefer lightly salted chips.
But that's like, a chip that a doctor prescribes. That's not a chip you choose.
I love it. I had a whole bag yesterday. So let's get really quickly into these recipes, which I'm excited about.
Oh my gosh,
I am so excited about
it. 3 minutes to wrap this up.
Okay, yes. Okay, so this one's going to be quick. So it's season transition comfort food. And for me, I made the most amazing chicken tortellini soup yesterday because it's been raining sheets out here for the last couple of days. So I was like, ooh, this is soup weather, right? So I took 2 chicken breasts and I kind of filleted them, seasoned them on both sides with my go-to 4 seasoning, salt, garlic powder, pepper, and Cajun seasoning.
Wait, can you just pause? What does filet mean? Does that mean cut them a certain way?
I just kind of cut them in half.
Okay.
Because to me, I feel like even though I'm buying like organic chicken breasts, they're still thick. So, and I don't want the thickness. So I cut them in half, brown them on both sides in avocado oil. And
can
then
can you just buy the humane instead of the organic? I don't want to keep driving the point home, but it doesn't matter if they're organic. It just matters that they're humane. Just putting it out there.
If they're what?
Humane.
Certified. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So I am getting a lot better as a result of because for me, it was just as long as it was hormone-free, antibiotic-free, cage-free, all these different things. But now...
Thank you. That makes me
so I am... And that's only because I'm concerned about... I feel like a lot of people are sicker now because they are not
picky about the type of meats
they're putting in their body.
And
so,
the food system is
preservative.
Crazy. It's crazy.
And I hear that here in the United States, it's worse. It's worse.
Why are we so sick? Yeah.
It's worse than anywhere else. It's worse.
But, it is. I think... I don't know about anywhere else, but it's worse than other developed countries.
Most,
you know?
Yeah, most people, like, they say that in Europe, our food would not be allowed.
Europe, is
you know?
Yeah.
So,
okay, sorry. Go ahead.
But, so I brown it on both sides in the avocado oil, pull it out, and I've cut up carrots, red bell pepper, onion, and celery. So I put that in the pot after I pulled the chicken out to sweat it. Then I put the chicken back in whole, the way it is, filleted. And I put in chicken broth and I season it with some Italian seasoning, I put Italian seasoning, some paprika, and some salt and pepper, right? Just in the broth. And then I put rosemary and thyme and I let that go for... Yes, I let that go for 45 minutes while I put my garlic heads in the oven because, you know, I was going to make me some garlic bread.
Oh, I
so
love
I put
that.
My garlic heads in the oven with a little avocado oil. So they're going at the same time. Then I just used the tortellini that you buy packaged, like the 4 cheese tortellini.
Yeah.
I just used that. So after the broth was where I needed it to be, I poured a family size bag of tortellini in there. And then I used a little bit of heavy cream. I pulled out the stems from the fresh aromatics and the herbs. And then I put some heavy cream and some fresh Parmesan and let that go. And then I didn't go go with traditional garlic bread this time. Do you remember the Red Lobster cheesy bread?
I never went to Red Lobster.
Okay, so in California, we had Red Lobster back in the day. I haven't been a Red Lobster
fan. I just never went there.
But if you go to Red Lobster, everybody loves their cheesy bread, their biscuits, right? I found them in the frozen aisle, and I was like, wouldn't this be great with some of my homemade garlic butter? So put those in the oven and then brushed them with the garlic butter with the pieces all over it and had that hot soup. And
they're like biscuits.
Yes. And what made the soup just stand out was the fresh herbs. You know, it was so good and it was so warm and it was so filling. It was literally all I ate yesterday, but the fresh herbs turned it out. So
do you put the whole stick of the herbs in? Is that what you were saying? Is it then you pull out the stem at the end?
I pull out the stem, yeah.
Oh, interesting. So you don't put the actual like herb in there. You just put it in and then take it out.
You just put it in for flavor.
Interesting.
And so, but when you pull out, when you're plating it, so the only other thing I did do was I pulled my chicken breast out and cut it up. The same thing I did with my chicken noodle soup. I cut it, but I cut it so it's chunks. So when you're getting a big healthy spoon, you have like carrots and the tortellini and chicken. And when you dip that biscuit in there,
yum.
Yes, ma'am. It was beautiful. It was beautiful. But when you're looking at the sauce, even though it's at the sauce, it's white. I didn't put a lot of heavy cream, so it's a light colored sauce. But you can see because I use Italian seasoning and the fresh herbs, so you see the greens in there. It's beautiful. It was a beautiful soup last night.
That sounds beautiful.
It was amazing. And I was very happy and very full, and I passed out again.
That's the life. That's exactly what Uncle Bob would do. I love that. He would do that exact thing. Just take a nap, eat and take a nap.
So what's your season transition comfort food?
So it's funny because I didn't have one until just this morning, and I just decided it's actually really similar to yours. Mm-hmm. I decided that my season transition, it's also a soup, and it's a broccoli soup, because broccoli, I think, is like a, I don't know if it's like a, it's cooler temperatures. I think it's like a spring. I'm just going to call it a spring. It's what I am thinking of for this transition. So recently, I've never done any soup. Once I did a squash soup, but this is the second soup I've ever made. I don't know why. I've just never made soups. But this is a broccoli. I know. I've just never made them. Ever since learning to cook, I just never sort of went into that direction. Even though I like soup, I don't eat it that often. I love a tomato bisque. I love that. I love to have it at a restaurant, but I've just never made it at home. So this soup is a broccoli mushroom soup. And you start by just firing up a pot and throwing in basically an onion. And you just cook that, and then you add in some garlic. So all the best things, I think, start with onion and garlic. Then I am the type of person who takes the things off because I'm always scared I'm going to burn garlic. So then I just throw mushrooms in with a little bit more oil, and I just brown those mushrooms. You have to brown the mushrooms. It really adds a lot of flavor to the soup because this is a vegetarian soup. So you have to play with heat quite a bit to add the flavor that you would have with a meat. So I throw those mushrooms in, and I brown them. And then I pour in, like I said, I love that vegetable broth. I just love like Swanson vegetable broth. I buy like, you know, they come in 4-cup boxes. I've always got 4 in my pantry. So I throw in 2 cups of the vegetable broth. And then I simmer it for 30 to 40 minutes. And then I just add in, same thing as you, I do heavy cream and Parmesan cheese. So it's 1 cup heavy cream and 1/2 cup grated Parmesan cheese. And you can play with those ratios if you want. And then if you're feeling fancy, you can add a little bit of chopped parsley at the end. I rarely have parsley in my fridge. Yes. If I do have it, I'll add that. And then you got to get a crusty bread and you just serve that right up with the mushroom broccoli soup.
And yes.
And the heavy cream, or you can actually, the other day I didn't have heavy cream and I substituted 1/2 and 1/2. Just as good.
It just is. As good. It really is.
I couldn't tell the difference. And I might even prefer it because it was just a little bit lighter.
It's lighter.
But
it
still
is.
Creamy. Yeah. But
I've done that.
Plus the Parmesan, you really cannot go wrong with that combo. Yeah. And then you have to salt and pepper to taste. Boom, done. Eat it with a crusty bread. I don't add anything to the bread that I'm, because I like to dip the bread in soup. So it's like,
yeah.
For me, when I'm dipping the bread, I don't really want the butter to be on there because I feel like it's sort of interfering. Like now there's like these other flavors. Like I'm just trying to get the soup on the bread. I'm like a simple gal.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it.
I love that. That sounds really good.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, this has been amazing.
A journey.
Amazing.
A journey.
It's been a whole journey, but thank you for hanging in there with us today. And if you've listened for this long,
you're still here.
Listen, you are our people. Okay.
Yes.
You are our people. So thank you for joining us for another amazing episode of What's the Temp podcast. We are so excited to be with you. Be great on purpose.
Have a great 24. Bye.
Bye.
Baby.
This is the sunset.
Baby.
This is the sunset. Our hands are tied together. Tied around each other.
Baby. Don't care much about tomorrow, and it's okay.